This is Beyond Mentorship with Dr. Nimrod Mbele, a show that matches business mentees with exceptional mentors to provide the skills and knowledge to navigate the entrepreneurial journey. Beyond Mentorship is brought to you with the compliments of Plus 94 Research, the science of decision making.
A very good evening and welcome to this week's installment of Beyond Mentorship here at 101.9 High FM and as well as 91.1. My name is Nimrod Mbele. I'm delighted to share this space and time with you as we continue to add value, to seasoned and up-and-coming entrepreneurs who are making a meaningful and positive impact in society. The business insights shared by our guests are certainly unparalleled, if I may say so myself, for we bring you captains of industry with deep business acumen. We bring you individuals who have amassed years and years of experience in starting businesses and sometimes failing, but not because of their resilience, they are able to bounce back and become more successful in their businesses. In tonight's episode, we bring that kind of individual in the name of Sam Hutchinson, who is a co-founder and the CEO of SendMac. Sam will be giving us insight about his journey of establishing a global entity offering solutions against online fraudsters. We also know how fraudsters and impersonators are lacking in the world of internet. We all know overhead. At some point in our lives, people have been scammed. We've heard or seen fake shopping websites, websites that travel scam, debt relief, and what's of you, fake antivirus software. There are just hundreds and hundreds of the fraudsters out there. So it will be quite interesting just to see and how that impacts the kind of solution they provide impacts in business scaling up. I would imagine that some of you are obviously interested in cybersecurity, or to avoid any or falling victim to online fraudsters. Then if that's your take for tonight, that's certainly a place to be at. And therefore, I would urge you to stay tuned so that you can hear more and more about that. But the essence of our conversation with Sam will certainly be around how to scale up businesses. And before we get into the gist of our conversation, let me express my gratitude to the afternoon drive, Michael McCann and his team. Thank you very much. They are back when you're ready tomorrow at the same time. So do give them the love and support as they will certainly reciprocate by giving you up-to-date current affairs and as well as keeping you informed. Moving along, and I also want to thank my team here, Greg Kuthri, as well as who's on the controller, Harris Leke, a sterling producer of the show. Gentlemen, I want to thank you in advance for attending to those gremlins that make this show a pleasant to the ear of the listener. If you missed any of our last previous show, not to worry, simply go to our website. And I want to quickly reflect on the engagement I've had with Clive, who's a former chief operating officer at Accenture, as well as the founder and the CEO of Cogensive Capital. We had a very fascinating, thought-provoking, and insightful conversation, which I implore you to go and retrieve that particular podcast and share your views through our socials, our SMS line is 34419, the Telegram is 061-895-019, and your views and thoughts are most welcome via my X handle, which is at Dr. Mbele. As I have alluded in my introduction, in today's conversation, we are privileged once again to tap into your business insights from yet another incredible executive in the name of Sam Hutchinson, who is the founder and the CEO of SendMac. Without any waste of time, let me take this opportunity to welcome Sam. Sam, good evening, and thanks for coming through to Beyond Mentorship.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I just want to do like a quick audio check. You can hear me well, I suppose.
Lovely, loud and clear. Good. Loud and clear. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
On this glorious Monday evening. So, obviously, you have been in a tech space for some time. Perhaps maybe the first question that one may ask is, for listener who may not know who Sam is, in a nutshell, who is Sam Hutchinson?
Yeah, so, I mean, there's a whole bunch of titles which sit next to my name if you have to look me up, but I prefer to call myself a mildly charming nerd. I studied computer science at WITS and applied mathematics, And actually, I'm just an engineer at heart. I like to solve difficult problems. And if you're as old as me, you might know of something called the dot-com crash. So I studied computer science, and I tried to get a job in the dot-com crash so nobody would hire me. And I have been building businesses since then, right? So yeah, that's how I like to describe myself. Mildly charming nerd, but at heart, I'm an engineer.
No, thank you very much for that insight, which is often useful as we kickstart our very interesting conversation. You know, as I've said, you know, you have... In my intro, you have established a number of companies. Obviously, you have a very good insight on how to scale up a business. But first and foremost, what inspired you to follow a career in IT space?
Yeah, I wish that I had like a romantic answer. So I think if you speak to a lot of entrepreneurs who start businesses, most of them will actually, if they're honest with you, they'll admit that they fell into their position of fortune, right? I think when you're studying something like computer science, you're bound to build a business in the area that you studied, unless you maybe fell into something else. So, I mean, if a lot of people ask me why I started businesses and things like that, so I first started a company because no one would employ me, right? And I had to put food on the table and look after some people. So I started selling my time for money, and I got pretty good at it, to be honest. And after a couple of years of doing that, we just started building businesses. Yeah, so maybe we can, I'll take your guidance on where you want this conversation to go, but I mean, I can tell you from the beginning or towards the end, but what do you think would be most useful to your listeners?
Pretty much everything. You know, for you to become an entrepreneur, it's obviously out of the kind of solutions that you wanted to resolve, the problem that you wanted to solve via your solution. So we're going to have to take a break in just a minute. Once you come back, we'll thresh out the rationale behind that particular venture that you have started, and most importantly, how some of the successes and failures that have gone through, which are of critical importance to the listener. Let's take a break. We'll come back in a second.
This is Beyond Mentorship with Dr. Nimrod Mbele. It's brought to you with the compliments of Plus 94 Research, the science of decision making.
Welcome back. We've just literally started. You haven't lost out a bit. I'm joined by Sam Hutchison, who is the founder and ex-CEO at St. Marcus. And Sam here has just, you know, is quite keen to give us insights on the kind of turbulence that he has experienced as an entrepreneur. Sam, let's start off by saying, when you started a business, you said you nobody could employ you. By default, you said, look, well, if I can't be employed, I have to create employment, you know, because you're already armed with a certificate from RITS that suggests that you were ready. But you obviously had to change your mindset, because that is something that is important in this particular show. What sort of, you could not be employed, and you quickly had to say, I'm obviously competent and capable to become an employer. Tell us what sort of mind change or the shift in your mind that was activated for you to become an entrepreneur and seasoned and a successful entrepreneur from that end.
Yeah, I think I want to answer that question maybe just by telling you my story a little bit, right? So I left university, and we started a company which was really just a consulting business, and we sold our time for money. And really, I did anything legal for money for about 6 years. But the truth is after 6 years of doing that, we realized we were making good money, and we were building custom software for various organizations, but we were doing lots of different things. And we were actually not very good at anything except building other people's ideas, right? Now, the truth is when you're selling your time for money, you can do a lot of things which you don't necessarily believe in. So after about 6 years, we decided to change our focus, and we decided to build our own product. So if you think about it, we decided to build our own bad idea. Instead of building somebody else's bad idea, we built our own. And we built a digital communication product, which was technically an email marketing product or an SMS product. And we focused very hard on just doing that one thing. And I think a lot of beautiful things come out of, if you're a highly skilled individual that has studied something difficult, if you put your mind to a single thing and you focus on that a lot, you can actually become very good at that. And if you become very good at that, you can set yourself apart from everybody else and you can create a business out of that. And that's what we did. So I like to describe my first 7 years of school fees and learning and doing anything legal for money. But then the next sort of 7 years was when I built an email marketing business, which was we focused. And we became by far the best in South Africa at that. And that was when I really would consider my proper entrepreneurial journey, is when you take a risk on an idea of your own and you focus on it and you build it and you try and get somebody else to pay you for that idea. Right. Does that start to help?
Absolutely, absolutely. I'm quite intrigued. My silence, obviously, I'm absorbing quite a bit that you put through to us. So from a business strategy point of view, because some insights that you want to impart to the listener who are aspiring to become like yourself or who are reading this kind of business, take us through your thinking around how important strategy is in relation to a business scale up. We'll get to scaling up first and foremost, because we have a lot of entrepreneurs who haven't really mastered the art of crafting a strategy to ensure that their business becomes focused, the business becomes relevant, the business speaks to the needs of a particular client. From where you're sitting and based on your own personal experience, take us through the importance of crafting an important strategy, which is the basis for build up, because you don't build from nothing, you build from a baseline.
Yeah, so strategy is actually a big word, and sometimes that can be a bit overwhelming. Sometimes I think you've got to start with the very basics. So when you're starting a business and you're building a product or something like that, you have to answer some of the most basic questions. And the most important one is the thing that I'm building going to get somebody else? Will somebody else swap their money for that thing that I built, right? And if your answer to that question is that yes, then you have to start to build your strategy around that. So will somebody give me money for the thing that I'm building? And then I have to work out, how do I get that thing that I'm building out to as many people as possible and as fast as possible? And then you extend on that. So you've got to ask all these strategic questions, but they don't have to be one huge complete strategy at once. You layer them up, just asking the simplest thing first. Will somebody buy this from me? Then you've got to ask, how do I get it to many more people? Then you've got to ask, what's their buying decision? How do they have an incredible journey about this thing? But I often think that we overcomplicate it. Just keep it simple in the beginning and then expand on those sort of fundamental questions. But yes, as you start to get bigger, you've got to have a strategic objective, which affects all the areas of your business: delivery, distribution, marketing, sales, you know, operational things. But it all, there's much simpler things in the beginning than that to solve.
And of course, one has to look at those simple items that you've spoken about. First and foremost, do I have a product? And one, yes, I do have got a product. How important is this product from a consumer point of view? Can somebody, like you said, swap his money, or can somebody buy this product? If you're saying yes, that's, you know, and how many people are likely to buy this product? And how soon can I take this product to market? And to what extent, you know, those are some of the basic questions which do come to the point of a business strategy. Am I correct?
Yes, that's correct. And I'll share with you an interesting story. So my first sort of successful business, which I eventually sold, we sold it to a strategic organization, and it was a great event for us. And then the second business we built, you know, we weren't sure if this idea would work. So I had some connections from my first business. I knew some CIOs of major banks in South Africa. So I phoned up one of the CIOs and I got on an airplane and I flew down to Cape Town. And I went and pitched this product to him. But what I did is on the plane is I just photoshopped this product into PowerPoint as if this product existed. And then I went and presented this imagined product that I had just come up with in my mind. And I went and presented this product to this bank, right? Now, we hadn't built it or anything. And what happened is this bank wanted this product and they wanted to purchase it, but they purchased it from one of my competitors, which was a significantly larger brand than us and things like that. And so we lost that deal. But you know what we won in that moment, which a lot of people forget, is I realized even though that bank wasn't going to buy from me, is they were going to buy it from somebody. they were actually willing to buy this product from somebody. Now, I got validation of our idea there. And you get that validation of your idea by trying to sell it first and foremost to your friends and family. You'll see if they'll buy from you, and then to your network. And then you start to do marketing and phone calls and all of those sorts of things. But the opportunities for your product are much closer in your circle than you think, right?
Absolutely.
So you don't have to have this. Yeah, go for it.
No, that's a beautiful insight, because here you're saying you had an idea which you had to pitch to a prospective buyer. It was not a fully fledged product. And this is something that most entrepreneurs out there who are obviously beneficiary of this kind of conversation is that you don't have to approach a funder or an entity with the basis of a product in hand. An idea is good enough, because out of an idea you are able to evolve and create a product. Which is quite fascinating, which is very, very fascinating. Let's take a break, because I see Craig said that we must go pay our bills. We'll be back in a second.
This is Beyond Mentorship with Dr. Nimrod Mbele. It's brought to you with the compliments of Plus 94 Research, the science of decision making.
Welcome back. This is Beyond Mentorship. I'm joined here by Sam Hutchison, who is the founder and the CEO of Centmac. Before we took that short break, Sam gave us a very interesting point, which we often hover on the show, that you do not have to have a product at hand for you to make a sales pitch. If you've conceptualized your idea and your idea is in sync with what the market requires, somebody out there will likely to buy. What is also quite of interest, what is interesting from Sam is that the network, we must always explore your network, your immediate network, because some of the people who are likely to buy from you or validate, if they're not buying, but they may validate your idea. Validation would come from people who are within your close network. And I find it very, very powerful that you don't have to go and seek validation elsewhere. You're able to use your colleagues, your friends, people within your immediate circle can be used as a sounding board to validate a product or an idea that you have. Moving on, Sam, you've build successful business that you eventually sold. And let's start on the positive side. What would you say were the contributory factors in building a successful business, which obviously was in a position to be scaled up? Somebody who's listening to the show now said, I've started a business and I'm pretty much in a particular ballpark figure, but I'm not sure how to strengthen it. From your end, as a person who've been buttered before, what would you say are the critical success conditions or factors that would make a would-be an entrepreneur who would fit your profile to be successful?
So I think there's two. It depends on what sort of phases in your life you're at. So I like to think of the two best times to start a business is. The first one is when you're still living at home and your costs are very low. So it means you can actually take very big risks and you don't have very big costs in life, right? And if everything falls apart, you can still get some support from your family. So that's a very interesting time. That is the first most important part of your life to start a business. The second most successful time to take a business is in your late 30s, right? And that's when you've had 10 to 15 years worth of work experience. You now understand how things work. You have a good feeling of the market. You have a network and all of that sort of stuff. But the problem when you're doing it in your late 30s is your cost of life is much more expensive. So depending on which two of those areas you're starting a business. So my second business I started in my late 30s, early 40s. So the things I needed there was we needed venture capital, we needed employees that we could hire, we needed product market fit, we needed all of those types of things. But when I was younger, we just really needed product market fit, right? And I had to build it and go and try and find a place to sell it to. Does that help answer your question?
Completely. But let's go back to when you're about 30, because a lot of, you know, most of entrepreneurs that we are part of our circle for this particular show, obviously those that are in the idea stage. We're talking people with a junior degree, people with the wealth of experience from the street, from the university of the street, and who are now wants to either scale up their position on the businesses or strengthen it whatsoever. So, you touched two variables. One, obviously, it's access to funding, and the other one is the product that fits the market. So, if someone were to come to you and say, how do I take this business forward? What your advice would be, assuming that they've got a product, and the product is not it's not rosy, or it's not obvious. There's some appetite in the market in terms of where this product can go, or there's sufficient appetite in the market about a product, but the product can be expanded, but not enough impetus attached to it.
So I think I don't really have the exact answer, but what I can do is I can share my story with you. And if people can learn from that journey that I had, then they can take what's important out of them. So the business that I started in sort of my late 30s and early 40s, we funded the very sort of early parts of that business out of our own savings. And we signed up about 20 customers and we built a product. Right. But we didn't really have any employees. There was just three of us that had built this thing. So that was very much self-funded. But once we had about 30 customers, that was enough market validation for us that there was an opportunity here to go to get large. So then we had to go and try and get some funding from a venture capital firm. And we were very lucky to raise some funds from an organization. And we raised some money from them. And then we hired salespeople and engineers to sort of multiply what we had already built. So we already were doing sales. We already were doing development. But you get private equity or you get funding to multiply that, right? So you want to now times it by 10. So we hired 6 or 7 salespeople and 3 or 4 engineers, and we now started doing 6 or 7 times more sales, right? That was our sort of journey. But we really did have to incubate that product ourselves and build the first versions of it and get slight product sort of market fit ourselves. It wasn't like we could get an investor to just invest in an idea, right? They wanted to see something. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. The interesting point that you're making, Sam, is the idea of incubation. Because in incubation, you're obviously trying to find a space where you can get validation of your product. Until you release it to the market. When you release it to the market, you release it with personally with higher validation, because the assumption that we can all make that you are now ready, you're about to make money. So that's one thing that I'm picking up, because some businesses they go into the market without necessarily having gone through incubation space or process. How important is incubation for any business to be successful, and to be not only just to be successful, but also to be ready for scale up?
Yeah, so when I think of incubation, I mean, I suppose it's quite a big word, but I think of sales, right? So can you actually sell your product to people? And I think you need more than 10 or 20 or 30 instances of that before you can start to think about things like scale up. Because even scale up has various levels of it, So when we first raised our first round of funding, we were doing 20 to 30 sales a month. Now we're doing over 100 a month, and we have 300 or 400 distribution partners. And we still think it's not fast enough, right? And just think about it, our business is doubling. We're kind of doing the triple, triple, double, double at the moment. So tripled in the first year, tripled in the second year, doubled. And we'll double again this year. So, we're growing incredibly fast, but we want to be signing millions of customers. That's real scale. But like I said, there are various phases of the scale up. And if you bring that back to incubation, in the early stages of your incubation, I think you've got to be able to sell your product to 20, 30, 40 people, right, without getting any funding. And then once you're starting to do that, then you realize that there's a pattern and a recipe that you can start to follow. And as soon as you have a pattern and a recipe that you can follow and repeat, then you are ready to start scaling your business.
Interesting observation from Sam Hutchison, who is a seasoned entrepreneur. Can we just pick up some inputs from the listener? One says here, I've been in manufacturing for many years. I've been in manufacturing for many years, and I found that the worst people to ask whether they are like it or not are your friends or family. So, which goes against the initial point that you raised, that people who you need to ask first for validation are your immediate folks. And
yeah.
On the contrary to what you just said. Yeah.
Yeah, that is a good point. So, I mean, I must admit, I'm in cybersecurity, and my poor mother doesn't care at all about cybersecurity. So that is true, right? But I do, if you look at my professional career, because I grew up in sort of tech, and I have a lot of friends and networks in the tech space. So I definitely have lots of friends in the tech space that I can get validation on my idea from. Now, I expect if you're in manufacturing and if you've been in manufacturing for a long time, it is likely you have a network full of manufacturing friends or engineering friends that you can test those ideas on. Does that make sense, what I've said?
No, absolutely, absolutely. But I suppose the word of advice that I could part with the good listener is that never give up. It doesn't matter for the fact that you have been let down by one or two of your close network does not necessarily mean that you cannot get validation from others as well. So it's also a matter of it's also a matter of you having to do a bit of a reflection of your networks at some point, because some
I think as an entrepreneur, you are a bit crazy, right? So you have to accept that about yourself. If you're really an entrepreneur, you're a bit nuts, because your chances of success are quite low, and you're also going to be competing against organizations with almost unlimited money. I want to share a bit of my story. So I started a business in something called email security, right? And we are competing with multi-billion dollar competitors with thousands of staff and hundreds of engineers, right? And you know what? We're able to be very successful, even though we're an incredibly highly competitive space. But if we had to go back to the beginning of our business and try and be logical about it, I mean, there is no maths that said we should start a business. You know, the chances of failure as an entrepreneur are very high. So you have to be tenacious and a bit nuts, right? But the chances and the opportunity is vast, especially when your only competitors are large organizations. Because you can be much faster than them.
I'm so intrigued by that thought process, because in business you don't have to be logical. That you're just saying, you have to be somehow not. You have to be crazy, because the odds that most businesses are experiencing are quite significant, and they're just bound to make anybody feel, ugh, what am I doing? I'm competing with these big giants, and I'm just a little ant. And the prospects of success are very limited. So you are saying to us, it doesn't really matter. You don't have, there's no formula. If you, first and foremost, about self-belief, I would imagine. If you've got a very good, if you've got self-belief, one, and you have sold a product to more than 20 or 30 people, and you really believe that there's a yearning for market. And I suppose if you're small, the level of agility, it's a lot higher than compared to a big boys and girls, so to speak. So there is an advantage in being small as an entrepreneur. There is an advantage in getting more traction compared to the big giants, because your response time is relatively quick, I would imagine, and you're able to nuance and pitch the product to the, you know, to the benefit of your consumers. Your take on that?
Yeah, I don't want to convey the message that you're completely nuts. I mean, you have to be a bit practical. So you have to have a product that people are willing to spend their money on. You have to be able to recruit a team that will build your idea, and you have to have some sort of distribution and some sort of mechanism to collect the money. Those are all just fundamentals of business. But if you sit and dwell on the reason that you're never going to succeed, I mean, then it's probably not the right thing for you, because that's what entrepreneurs do, right? We see the gap that the huge big people with unlimited money just don't see. And we see the opportunity in those places as well. And when you're small and nimble, exactly what you say, you can just turn the idea on its head. I mean, I can give you one example. So we compete with a huge billion-dollar organization. And I came up with them against a customer. It was a huge multinational in South Africa. And our price was cheaper, but the customer didn't care that the price was cheaper, right? Because, I mean, to be honest, sometimes the price doesn't matter. What customers often care about is that will the job get done? So instead of trying to compete further on price, we said to the customer, okay, we guarantee that the job will be done. And if the job is not done within 3 months, we won't ever bill you, right? And we'll relieve you from the contract. Now, there is no way that our competitor is going to say something like, we guarantee that the job will get done in 3 months, and that if we don't get it done, we'll refund you. And the customer loved how we just changed the terms of that agreement. They weren't necessarily worried about the money. What they were really worried about is that the job wouldn't be done on time.
Absolutely. Right?
So we had to create some sort of guarantee. So we changed the terms, and so we won the deal.
So that's one strategic insight that you want to share that you've shared with us. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back in a second. But when you're coming back, I really want us to hone in on the importance of the team, because it takes the team to take the company forward. So there has to be fit for purpose in your team. So let's take a break. We'll come back in a second.
This is Beyond Mentorship with Dr. Nimrod Mbele. It's brought to you with the compliments of Plus 94 Research, the science of decision making.
Welcome back. We have just really getting interesting and heated up with the very with conversation that I'm having with Sam Hutchison, who is the founder and the CEO of Centermark. And Sam is really a fascinating individual who's really giving us food for thought on, based on his personal experience, personal story of on how he became so successful. What I've picked up from you before we took the break, Sam, is that first and foremost, it's important to sell. There has to be sufficient quantity to justify your existence as the business. And you also spoke about the team, which I said before the break. Take us through the thinking behind what constitutes a good team, because business rise and fall at the back of a team. The fact that you have started a business does not necessarily make you a financial person, does not make you a strategist, does not make you a distribution guru, and so on and so forth. So there has to be, you need to be in a position that allows you to leverage on your colleagues or your business partners. How important is that? And, based on your personal experiences, since you've built a number of successful businesses,
yeah, the truth is that this is the most important thing, right? So having a team and an organization and a group of people that help you build an idea and build a business is the most important thing after the fact that you have something that people will buy from you. So I must admit, it's like the two biggest gifts in my life is the one I got to marry my wife, who was amazing for me. And the second one is I get to lead a group of amazing people, right? And we give a lot to each other. So, I mean, I must admit, I'm certainly not the smartest person in the company. And I'm very, very fortunate to work with a group of people who are significantly more skilled at me than in their areas of business. And without them, there is no doubt we would not be where we are. Just, I don't know what more to say.
That lies in the importance of humility, because starting a business, you could be a founder, but a business, once you get to a particular threshold, will require different sets of skills, will require a different attitude, will require different pretty much everything. So it is important for you as a business person to know that you can only grow your business up to a certain point, but you do need people that are credible, people who are smarter, than you. To create that particular business, people who contribute even more than you. It's just a matter of trying to find fit And I'm sure it is difficult. In a particular case, you could have been very lucky, but we all know that how difficult it is to find fit for purpose, particularly from the team player, because everybody's competing. People don't have a sense of we are here to collaborate. We are here to focus on one thing and one thing only. How do you navigate that kind of a challenge? Because I'm sure you must have gone through it before.
I just navigate it patiently. I like to, like, a company team is actually remarkably similar to a professional soccer team. Like, you'll notice really good professional sports teams, the captain is often one of the, he's not the hero on the team, but he does work very hard and he often leads by example, but he's often not the superstar on the field either. Not the guy scoring all the goals. It's quite interesting. And I find my style of leadership, I'm not saying that's the best style of leadership, is very much the servant leadership. So my job at work is just to remove roadblocks and help other people achieve what they're trying to achieve as quick as and as efficiently as possible. Navigating that, I know I'm not the smartest person in the room, and I work as hard as I can to give people the space that they need to do their jobs as best to their ability. It's a weird sort of servant position. Yeah, I don't know if that makes sense.
Well, it makes absolute sense to me, because for you to even acknowledge that you are not the smartest, but trust me, a lot of people would probably think you're the smartest. It's just that you're just being a nice guy. You just, you know, you don't want to rub off the people the wrong way, you know, because when you come across as the shining star, you obviously will have a propensity to dissuade people away from you. But I think the soccer team metaphor is important from a business point of view. We acknowledge that each player in the soccer team has a specific role to play, and they need to be given space. The operative word that I like, you give people space to do what they need, what needs to be done. And not only do you give people space, but you also remove the obstacles, you know, and
trust them.
And trust them. So those are very important elements of building a very successful team, because if you know, there are people who report to you and there are people who report to other people and so on and so forth, but if you have that ability to remove the clot and the fudge, if you like, and build trust, more and more people are likely to gravitate towards your leadership, because you are a solution guy and you're not crowding space, you're not asking for, you're not going for a juggler, if you like. So those are very important points that you're sharing with us tonight, because a person who's managing a business, who wants to be everything, you can't be everything. You know, even if you're a leader, you must also acknowledge that somebody who's in finance is better than you in finance. Somebody who's good in sales is better than you. So those are some of the nuggets that we're picking up, which are important building blocks of a team. Your take on that?
Yeah, I agree with that. There's three things which I kind of live by all the time as a leader and things like that. The first is be generous. The second is be forgiving, and the third is don't be a pushover, right? So it's amazing how much if you give to your team, they'll give it back to you. And if they make mistakes, forgive them for their mistakes, because every time they're making a mistake, they're probably doing something they've never done before. Does that make sense? And if they've never done it before, it means they're pushing for innovation and for difference. So if they make a mistake, you got to forgive them for that. Yeah.
Interesting point. Well, one is that you have to be generous. You're generous, you're forgiving, and you're not a pushover. Well, obviously, a pushover, you stand your ground. When somebody is waffling, you say, listen, hey, wait a second, hey, how did you arrive at this issue? So which means you are able to engage. You may not be an expert in a particular field, say legal issues, you may not be a lawyer, but you obviously, you apply your mind on issues that would have been presented by somebody who is an expert. So that's a very important attribute to have as a leader. And the first two, being generous, it's commendable, but not every single person is generous. Let's just get it out there. It's not every single person who's forgiving. You know, let's get it out there. So these are your own personal traits, your own personal mantra that you live by. And it's no surprise that you're this successful, because those are very positive and powerful attributes any servant leadership would have.
Yeah, they're admirable qualities of human, but there is a lot of good science behind why those things work. Some simple things, like if you want to be a highly innovative company, you have to have a high tolerance of failure, right? I mean, that's just a fact. You can't innovate if you don't accept failure. So therefore, you have to be forgiving, right? that's it. If you want company people to give you a lot of themselves, you've got to give a lot of yourself to them.
Absolutely.
Yes. So anyway, basics.
No, context is important, because when you are in the manufacturing space, obviously productivity, everything has to be measured. You can't have the same level of forgiveness you would have if you're in a very demanding. You're not gonna be wasting my resources and expecting me to forgive you.
People often try and give me those types of examples. They'll say, oh, this doesn't work in medical, or it doesn't work in manufacturing. But you have to realize that before your product in manufacturing comes out on the line, there is an enormous amount of research and development of the product line and processify a whole bunch of things which happen before the product. And in all of those spaces, you can do things right. It's not like you're thinking just about the end. There's a whole bunch ways you get to the end. So anyway, yeah.
And I want to come back to some of the people that you work with, the extent to which they embrace your philosophy, because that's another ball game together. Let's take a break. We'll come back in a second.
This is Beyond Mentorship with Dr. Nimrod Mbele. It's brought to you with the compliments of Plus 94 Research, the science of decision making.
Welcome back to the last leg of a very interesting conversation I'm having here with Sam Hutchison, who is the founder and CEO of Sandmark. Sam is really a serial entrepreneur who ventured into IT space, and he has made a considerable amount of contribution into that particular space on personal success and also making other people successful purely based on his ideals. Before we took that break, he defined himself as a very generous leader. He defined himself as a very forgiving leader. But last but not least, he's not a pushover. And he used a very interesting metaphor around a soccer team. And he, obviously, being the servant leader, he does allow people space to fail. He's supportive of his colleagues. But the other issue that I want to build on the team level is that this is who you are. How do you ensure that the same philosophy that you hold and that you live by find expression in other layers of organizations? Because we all different individuals. And who have different leadership style. This works for you, but obviously as a head of the entity, you obviously want to make sure that there's no deviation, or there's no, let me put it, how do you deal with outliers in your, outliers as from a leadership point of view within your organization?
Yeah, so I suppose this comes back to some of the things we should have in a business. So, when we're talking about strategy, every company needs some sort of vision, something that they're trying to achieve. So in my organization, our vision is something quite difficult. It's like, we want to make the internet a safer place, right? And that's our vision. And then every organization should have some sort of values, the way that they behave. Now, my job as a leader in our organization is to make sure that the company behaves by the values that we've agreed on as a company. So for example, some of our values is, we believe in mastery. Now, mastery is the act of being very good at what you do, right? Another one of our values is autonomy, right? We want people to have the freedom to make up their own decisions and not feel afraid to make those decisions. Now, that's really my job, one of the things which I have to focus on a lot is to make sure that our organization is fulfilling the values in which we should operate. And we chose those values because we think that living those values, first of all, it'll be a great place to work. And second of all, it will be a very successful company if we live out those values. Right. So when you ask me, do different people have different sorts of beliefs or values or things like that? Yeah, we all have different values, but we've all agreed to live our company values. And that's one of the jobs of a CEO of an organization, to make sure that you live those.
Absolutely. I mean, I couldn't agree with you more, because when you're about to scale up any company, you have to scale up on a basis of uniform norms and standard, uniform values, uniform and agreed upon vision, as you've currently put it out. And when you're saying mastery, obviously you have to master your craft. And if you say to a person, you know, you have autonomy within your particular space. So those are very useful insights that you're sharing with us, which are, in my view, a building block of a company that can be scalable, that can be reproduced, if you like, purely because there's common vision, there's common values, and how managers obviously operate. There's some level of conformity based on those pretty much parameters that has been agreed upon. But one of the things that I wanted to get from your end is a lot of businesses fail to, fail to scale up when opportunity arises. The question perhaps maybe is somebody who's thinking about scaling up and unsure about whether to scale up, because scaling up has financial implications, resource intensity, and so on and so forth. What your advice will be to somebody who already is in operation and wants to scale up, but unsure the basis for scaling up purely because of uncertainty that we all are jittery about in the market?
Yeah, so once again, I'm always nervous about giving other people advice, because like we all live in such different worlds. I can just really share our own stories. Yep. Like, you know, when we started our company, I must admit, I didn't really want to build a large business. We thought maybe we can sign a couple of hundred customers and we can live a nice, easy business with not too much stress. But there was this moment where the company started to have a life of its own, right? And it started to run faster than we could imagine. And at that moment, we had to decide, are we going to cut this thing's legs off, or are we going to let it run and just jump on the horse? And we decided consciously, we're going to let it run and jump on that horse and ride it as fast as we can. And now we're doing that, right? But it is a conscious decision. You decide if you want to scale up or not. I don't think you have to. I mean, there's a lot of amazing, great businesses that haven't gone through exponential growth and things like that, because all of that comes with an enormous amount of stress and pain. And sometimes it's not even worth the finances, to be honest. But it is a conscious decision. And we are now, sometimes we're growing faster than I think we should be. And sometimes the stress is too high. But at least we're a team that is all on the same team. And we're winning together, and we're also losing together sometimes. Not all the time, but sometimes. Does that make sense?
Absolutely, absolutely. Thank you very much, Sam, for your contribution. I think we're going to have to leave it here. I mean, you have been absolutely sensational in sharing your personal experiences.
It's very kind of you.
You know, when you've gone through, and which I certainly believe that somebody who's sitting in the car in his office or driving or whatever they might be doing, you've planted a seed that it is possible. Firstly, on the issue of ideation, you don't have to have a product. Ideas are good enough for you to pitch. And secondly, rely on your immediate network, because those are the people that can
get started.
Those are the people can give a validation, and you obviously have to work as a team, which is very important. And in a team, you don't have to be a star. You can lead by example. You know, you don't have to be a captain, as you've put it out. So and the three, you know, serious values that you've put to us, which obviously are subject to how the next person behaves. Be generous in your thinking, be forgiving, and don't be a pushover. So those are some of the nuggets that you have put to, that you've picked up, which I think are important. There looks like there's just before we part ways, there's one listener who wanted to, you know, obviously there's a question. He says, one thing that I've learned in business is you cannot stand, you can't stand gross that is receive disaster thinking. It's getting too big, is wrong. So, well, how I read is that it's getting big. When you're getting big in business, is it necessarily a wrong thing? I'm trying to reinterpret this, yeah?
I'll leave it to you. I'm just not sure.
Okay. All right. You know, that's great. That's, thanks for that. But anyway, as I was saying, we were literally parting ways with your, intelligent insight that you've shared with us. We're going to have to do this again. Thank you very much for your time.
Have a good day. Be well, everybody. Thank you to the listeners and all the best.
Thank you very much there. That was Sam Hutchison, who has really been stunning in giving us a very useful insight on how to manage a business and how to manage oneself, manage business, and the kind of leadership that you require, the team that you need to make a successful business, which is the basis for any business, it's being scaled up. Let's do this again. It has been absolutely beautiful. In the meantime, be kind to one another. Shalom.